Congratulations!
You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast, with me, Kate Rhodes.
And me, Maysoon Wazwaz.
Okay, so there was a pretty long little thread on some social media site this last week, and we thought about doing a dramatic reading of the entire thread.
But then Kate got scared of...
I got scared people would get
people
upset
involved
with us.
Would so want to murder us. And
we're going to just do a vignette where two people in this big conversation, this big free-for-all,
they go toe-to-toe,
and so we're just going to do a quick dramatic reading. We won't say who it was, but if you hear your own words and you want us to credit you, let us know and we'll credit you in the next episode. Okay, so the conversation was about YBCA, the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts, is in this weird Google Hunger Games.
Google is giving a grant of $500,000 to, there's 10 groups that are competing. There are four groups that will get $500,000, and the rest of the groups will get $2,500,000.
And the whole damn thing just doesn't make any
sense. $250,000.
Right. And the whole damn thing doesn't make any sense because the groups are like, there's one for like women who have loved ones that are incarcerated and like literacy programs and like,
it's a lot of like advocacy groups, not arts institutions. So it sort of seems like a weird kind of mix.
And the thing that Yerba Buena put their proposal or whatever in for is like some like, you know, neighborhood beautification project, which sounds like weird on it in its own right.
I think it's for that Market Street prototyping.
Even that on its own is, you know, I've always had weird problems with that whole thing.
Anyhow, so the thread basically is discussing that sort of...
like, should YBCA even be on there?
Be part of that group? It seems like the other groups are more deserving of that money.
And then it also got into a whole thing of, like, is public art even a worthwhile thing? Because so much of it is bad, especially things that are funded, like, through these kinds of things.
It's a very complex conversation, I think.
So these two characters just go toe-to-toe on public art. Oh, yes. We should have less art. I agree. In fact, we should probably stop making art altogether because some rich person somewhere might profit from it and we wouldn't want that. Barren environments are better. We don't need visuals to spark our children's imaginations as they walk down the street. Blank public spaces are good for everyone. We don't need anything that art influences or inspires either. Like, for instance, practically everything that surrounds us in our lives. Design, decoration, architecture, furnishings, headphones, handbags, colors, shapes, lettering, clothing, etc., etc., etc.
Oh, for goodness sake. No one on this thread is suggesting anything like that. If anything, everyone is saying the opposite. But the questions around how and why public art is funded, by who, and to what end are important to have a conversation around.
From the way the discussion is going, the flip side of who and how it's funded seem to be, under what conditions do we make it, or do we make it at all?
I think the question, under what conditions do we make it, is always an essential one. Though I might restate it as, what is the framework in which our participation is to take place? As invested as I am in the production of and discourse around art, I don't see it as something of inherently greater value than many other types of activity, nor do I think that it exists in some magically privileged space, unfettered from social, economic, political, or ideological contexts. The word art refers to a vast arena of human activities that can have many different meanings and serve many different ends, some of which may be quite oppositional to each other, and all of them produced by and subject to a shifting set of relations within the culture they occupy. Under certain conditions, I might say it was better that some art was not made. If the promotion or dissemination of artistic labor is being used in such a way as to obscure or disguise areas of social inequity, as a kind of Potemkin village effect, or a decorative band-aid placed over a gaping fissure resulting from a failure of social institutions, then one might argue that, under such conditions, we ought not to make it, or at least we ought to call attention to those conditions and proceed with criticality and a certain skepticism towards the narratives that are being put in place by the people holding the purse strings. Please note, however, that I'm not in any way saying that's the case here. I'm just trying to think in broader terms about the context behind this debate.
Well, I understand what you're saying, except in situations where whomever's commissioning the art has a clear political or propaganda agenda and are requiring that artists compromise their art accordingly, I'm skeptical about prejudging not only the purse string holders, but even more importantly, the potential for the art to do good. At worst, if artists, either individually or as a group, come across as difficult to work with, all artists, as well as public art commissions in the area, could end up suffering as a result.
I suspect that we are operating from two different ascents of the role and value of art to find much agreement on this. For example, I know you are speaking as someone with a great love and enthusiasm for the arts, but I am uneasy when people start talking about the potential of art to do good. Justifying anything simply on the assertion that it does good is problematic because good is a purely relational outcome that historically tends to be based on where one happens to be standing with respect to the values of the dominant culture. As to the second part of your comment, I must confess that I find the implications of what you are saying unsettling. From my point of view, if artists cannot speak their minds or operate from a place of criticality in respect to the larger institutions of culture without having to worry about having a negative effect on all public arts funding, then the culture is suffering from far worse problems than a lack of art.
Whatever it is these days, there's likely to be someone who doesn't like it. But that's no reason not to do it. As for artists speaking their minds, I've brought this up in similar discussions before. There are always ways of working your agenda into the mix. I usually cite SFWPA murals in this regard. At Coit Tower, in the lobby of the old Rincon Annex, main SF post office in particular. Some artists were more subtle about it, others were in your face, but they all got it done. And they all took the jobs.
Well, interesting you bring up the Coit Tower murals. The San Francisco Artists and Writers Union had actually petitioned to have murals included in the tower. Once completed, however, the overtly political nature of many of the works generated a huge controversy, leading to the threat of their destruction by anti-communist groups and the condemnation of the murals by none other than the San Francisco Art Commission. In the end, it took a strike by the SFWAU, a period of closure of the tower by the police, and the removal of one of the more controversial frescoes before the tower was eventually opened to the public. So I think that makes the argument for artists pushing back.
Good point. But my point was that they painted the murals first. Then all that stuff happened. If you want to see radical, go down to Rincon Annex and see those, intact and unchanged.
Sure. And my point is that even such a contentious and negatively received project did not bring an end to publicly funded art in SF. Here we are, almost a century later, the murals are still there, and the SFAC is still funding projects, so it seems it's still safe for artists to voice their concerns and be critical without worrying that if they make waves, it's going to ruin things for everyone else. For now, anyway.
My point is that refusing to do the art, but rather opting to protest first, is a risky approach. Your arguments actually illustrate what I'm trying to say, that it's much more difficult to change or remove it once it's there than to disallow it before it ever gets made. So what do you think, Maysoon?
I think both points are actually well taken.
Right?
Yeah.
Isn't it surprising?
Yeah, I mean, they're coming from two different perspectives, but I think they're both sort of valuable.
It's very surprising because the person who starts out being sarcastic saying let's not have any art and let's say fuck you, blah, blah, blah. Like, I was ready to think, like, I was ready for person two to really rip them a new one. But
person two,
honestly,
is very...
like, they both had strong points. And by the end of it, I was like, you know, wouldn't it be cool if any of the artists that are against this kind of like creative placemaking, like community, whatever, neighborhood beautification shit, went out, got that money to do a project for that, and then did some shit that was like totally subversive and radical.
Yeah.
I mean, it might take you having to put in a fake proposal,
right,
and getting chosen with some weird 8-way ping pong table,
yeah,
you know, and then showing up with like a fucking, I don't know what. You have to figure that out.
You mean as part of the Yerba Buena? Like if Yerba Buena got the funding and you applied as an artist?
Yeah, and you make a giant like monumental sculpture of like Ed Lee and Shrimp Boy.
In solid gold?
Yeah.
I don't necessarily see YBCA as not being risk-taking. Like, I don't think they would.
Well, I mean, in general, like, I agree with that statement, but yeah. In this particular thing, like, I didn't think that prototyping festival.
Well, I like, couldn't go like to a it couple this is projects only during the day.
There were a couple projects that I thought were interesting and like in dialogue with the issues that I think are relevant to have in art that's going to be in a public space. But most of it was just like wacky benches and yeah. like fun light shows. Yeah. And, you know,
it seemed all pretty lighthearted.
Yeah. Or like Burning Man-y. Like if the money was just going to, I don't know.
I mean, it'd be cool if it went to some artists who were doing more challenging work.
Yeah. But like no art project is going to stand up to like giving aid and assistance to people that are in like dire need for like basic material support. No art project is going to sound relevant when it's next to that. What do you think, listener? Give us a call, write in.
Chatting with a friend earlier today, and she was mentioning, or she sort of said, it's auction season. I was like, it's not really auction season. She's like, well, yeah, it is. There's a couple places having their auctions. SF Camera Works having an auction coming up, and so is Root Division, as we know, it's already up. And we were talking about sort of auction protocol for artists. It's obviously auctions are really important fundraising events for these nonprofit art institutions. But it's tricky because they're asking artists for the most part to give their work, to donate their work.
For money, and it's like not
to the organization.
There's so, no extra, there's no qualms or whatever, there's no dressing it up as though it's not, you are giving them essentially money.
Yeah.
And then they're
like,
taking
you give your me your piece, I'm gonna sell it and take all
I'm
the proceeds
have that money. I'm
and
using
thanks so much, we really appreciate your support of our institution, even though you're a poor starving artist.
Yeah, like oftentimes. I feel like with a show, even though it's kind of the same, where like
you
know,
get your work back
because they say the same thing with the auction. They'll be like, you're gonna get some exposure.
Yeah,
all the high rollers are gonna be here tonight, they're gonna see your work.
And that, I mean, I think that is actually can be true in some situations that you get exposure, but you'll get exposure in your show, you'll get exposure in juried shows, you kind of get exposure everywhere.
And like, what
so
is
it's
that?
Kind of like it's like nothing. Well, that's nice, but what's the value in that? Not so much. Like, what really comes of seeing someone's work in an auction? I mean, I think people have been not picked up for gallery representation, but people have certainly been discovered, quote unquote, by gallerists.
Has that happened to you, listener? Call in 419-351-6606 or email us congratulationspinetree@gmail.com. I've never heard anyone say this was my big break.
Well, no, definitely not this was my big break. But I think some people have had sort of
the
commission works
like,
come out of that, I think.
You make some painting, whatever thing. Gallery sells it or whatever, nonprofit sells it for $1,000. Mm-hmm. Did you get back $1,000 worth of exposure?
Yeah, I doubt it.
Probably not.
So the other thing I wanted to point out for artists who are considering donating to an auction, oftentimes institutions will give you, will offer, I don't want to say give you the option, but will offer to give you 5%, 10%, 15%, or maybe 20% even of the whatever the work sells for. And you should take that if you want to take that. Don't feel like it's, you know, they're going to look upon you badly if you take.
Will they?
No, they won't.
How do you know?
Well, I didn't. When I worked in a nonprofit that had auctions.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's a reality that we all understand, well, that many of us understand that artists need to make a living and get by and somehow support themselves. And so if 20% of $1,000 is going to help them in that gesture or in that direction, then great, let's do that. So okay. I don't think you should feel guilty. I think I was talking to someone who was like, yeah, I never really feel like you're really meant to accept that offer. You know, that you're supposed to like, oh, that's nice that they offer. But you kind of feel like if you take the highest percentage, you're sort of an asshole or you're.
Yeah.
Don't feel that way, guys. I want to give you permission to take that percentage if you want it.
A few episodes ago, we asked what was going on at UC Davis because we were talking about stuff in the South Bay. So we got an email from one of the grad students in the MFA program at UC Davis.
Oh, great.
He said, "Hello, Kate and Maysoon. This is your friend Zach Clark. I can tell you exactly what's happening in Davis.
Cool.
Typically, not a lot."
Oh, Zach.
"The occasional barn costume party, I guess. However, next Friday, October 23rd, that hasn't happened yet." Huh. Awesome. I'm still on track. "We, the UC Davis MFA grads, will be having open studios from 7 to at least 9 p.m.
Cool.
We are often left out of the Bay Area art scene mindset, but it's only an hour-ish away. And really, there's some great work getting made up here. Plus, we're apparently having our thesis show in SF this year. So you've got to fucking deal with us eventually anyways."
Love it.
A bunch of their info is on a link which I'll provide in the underworld. And
cool. Open studios October 23rd.
If anybody wants to call him, his number is, just kidding, no. Not going to read that. And he just said he was out of the country over the summer and he listened to our show and he felt connected to the Bay. Yep. Thank you, Zach. Aww. Thanks for writing in.
Just what we want to hear.
I'm out here in Berkeley, California, at Cafe Milano, talking to Eli Thorne.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Eli, you are an artist and an art worker. Tell us about the show you just had at Southern Exposure.
Well, the show was curated by Jenny Ottinger at Southern Exposure called Makeover.
Could you tell us a little bit about the work that you had in there?
It was a wall of drawings that was oil and ink on paper. Because I'm trans, I was thinking about my lost boyhood, so I made drawings based on being a boy and what that would have been like making drawings at that age. So a lot of the imagery has to do with sports culture, physique, body, pain.
A lot of muscles.
Absolutely, a lot of muscles. Yeah, I think it's definitely erotic, a little homoerotic also, for sure.
You have shown for many years, many, many years as an artist, and being like in this transitional part of your life, how is it like navigating the art world and dealing with social stuff while you're
transitioning? It's pretty wild. It's so fresh and scary, but I have no guidelines of how to do it, so I just am upfront and forward and try to say, email people saying, these are my pronouns, this is the deal, so that people don't have to come up and ask weird, awkward questions, and people don't have to approach me first. It's weird also just because my email is still my old name and my website's now is still my old name, but I added my new name. So it's all really complicated and I'm like, it's also scary, but just got to do it. But so far people have been, you know, in the Bay Area really open-hearted and understanding and lovely. So there's been no throwback there at all.
How about in terms of your work as a preparator?
That's definitely been a little bit more odd because, well, I just started at the Berkeley Art Museum and they're wonderful people and I have gotten nothing but male pronouns since I started without even having to say anything, which is really bizarre which means I'm either being read as male now or they're just in the know and are like, okay, yeah, like this is a trans person. Who knows? It's a mystery. I mean, I came out to my boss there, but this was after everyone had already started saying he. So I don't know if it's like an avalanche effect where one person said he and everyone just was like, oh yeah, okay, like didn't even think about it. So it's a mystery to me, and it's really beautiful and nice feeling having my pronouns respected. And then not having to come out at the same time. So I guess I'm feeling the first bits of being read and, quote, passing as male. I hate the word passing, but for lack of a better term. But it feels good.
You also left the Bay Area for a little bit and moved out to Philadelphia. We went to grad school together. listener, FYI. And not long after we graduated, you went off to Philadelphia. Do you have any thoughts on leaving the Bay Area, coming back to the Bay Area? Maybe advice for people if they're thinking about leaving?
Yeah, well, I guess there's no right way or rhyme or reason, but my experience was that I didn't necessarily have a plan. My partner and I didn't have a plan, and which was fine and fun. In terms of art, I felt like I came running back to the Bay with my tail between my legs because it's a big, you know, Philly is a big city. The East Coast is a huge place. There's something to be said that you stay in the city where you went to graduate school and hold on to those connections that you make that are helpful and just have like a community that I definitely lacked in the East Coast. No advice, absolutely. I have no advice. All I can say is just try it out if you're curious. I mean, we also didn't have much money, so it was hard to really, you know, get a footing and try and... I mean, we were serving and so at restaurants, so it was kind of like... It was more of a cultural experience rather than my career or thinking about anything remotely like that. So, plus it was pre-transition in terms, like I was about to just have my top surgery and then I was starting testosterone months later. So it was all really hectic. So my art career was, in just until recently, has been on the total back burner in terms of like priorities in life.
Understandably so. I don't know if this is appropriate for us to talk about because we're not really involved at all and don't know hardly anything about it, but our alma mater from our MFA, Mills, is going through a massive, crazy restructuring, including maybe losing the book art department.
It's totally tragic. I'd probably have even harder feelings if it was the art department, of course, because I was so connected, but as we were talking about earlier, you know, the school needs money really bad and has to cut somewhere. And so where do you start? What do you do? What are the priorities? And being a spectator, I mean, we don't know a damn thing about what's going on in the middle, but all I know is it's sad. And so hopefully they can have an angel donor or something come down from fucking the clouds and help them out.
Do you have any other things that you would like listeners to know? Or anything for the young people.
Stay true and stay lighthearted, right?
Totally. Well, thank you so much for talking to us again. It's been over a year since your last interview on the show. I want to thank you for returning. And as always, congratulations.
Pine Tree.
Congratulations. You listened to another episode of Congratulations Pine Tree. You did it, and no one can take that away from you.
Sure can't. I just wanted to let people know that David Cunningham's memorial will be at Southern Exposure Tuesday, October 27th from 7 to 9. If you knew David or knew his work, come on by and celebrate his awesome life.
And contribution.
And contribution, definitely.